A while ago, I did a wedding, and the parents of the groom were from out of town. That poor family, they showed up a whole hour late. Now, we had some wonderful musicians, and they put on a little concert for us. They loved playing together. We had a grand time. We were waiting for everyone. But that family walked in kind of sheepish. They were not from the area, and I felt so bad for them. But they had gone around and around and around that town, and finally got to the church, but it wasn't on time. Well, that happens in a wedding every once in a while. But what's sad is when people that we love and we care about are not wandering around looking for a wedding. They're wandering around looking for Jesus. And they may or they may not know it, or they may be running from Jesus. But they're wandering, and sometimes they're getting into places where they shouldn't be. And they get stuck there, perhaps, time and time and time again. And those of us who love them and care about them, our hearts are just wrenching about them because we care about them and we see them keep on getting into trouble. Over in Hellam, over in Market Street, every once in a while I have someone that'll stop and they've been wandering around for an hour. They might have been looking for a pizza shop or something, and where are they? Well, they just can't get to it. But after a long time, they finally get there. And for those of our loved ones who are wandering around, we want them to get to Jesus. But we keep on praying for them. The Bible says that for some of them are like fools. The beginning of the Lord is, or the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. They're not fearing the Lord. And some of them, like fools, they're like dogs that keep going back into their vomit, or a pig that keeps going back into the mud. And our hearts are just wrenched because of them, but we keep on praying because of the hope that we share. Samson was a man that kept getting into trouble. At the beginning of this chapter, which is well known, at the beginning of this chapter, there's a few verses that are not well known. Look at the very beginning. He goes to the capital city, and he goes to a woman of the night. He's ruled in Israel for 20 years. Now, he hasn't ruled it because he's had a godly life, but he's a fool. He's going to the capital city of the enemy because he's got this desire for women, maybe some kind of an addiction, we'd call it today. But he goes behind enemy lines. He spends the night with her. And the boys in town find out who was there, their enemy, the enemy who had defeated them 20 years before. And they say, "We're going to get this guy when he comes out in the morning." So they surround him. They lock all of the gates. And about halfway through the night, Samson realizes that something is going on. And Samson goes to the city gates, which have been locked. He lifts them up on his shoulders, and he carries them to the edge of town, and he sets them so that they face Hebron, the key city of Israel. And then he goes home. He's a fool. But God takes care of him. God, by his grace, continues to strengthen him. Even though he doesn't deserve it, he's part of God's greater plan for Israel. And so the Lord empowers him once again. And he takes it for granted. At least we see that as we move into probably the most famous story of Samson's life. And that's the story of Delilah. So he goes to Delilah, who is now in his home area, but an area that seems to be infested with the enemy. And five of the leaders of the enemy come to Delilah, and they say, "He's not paying you, but we will." And they offer him they offer her the equivalent of $60,000 today to hand him over to her. And she thinks about it, and she says, "Okay, I think I can do that." And so Delilah, in the heat of night, starts to talk to Samson and says, Samson, Samson, man, you're a really strong man. You're getting on in years, but you're a pretty strong guy. And he says, yeah, you know, I am. Samson, what's the secret of your strength? And he said, you know, if you got some bowstrings that were still nimble, they weren't all dried up, if you tied me all up, then my strength would be gone. And so she puts him to sleep and she ties him up in a loving sort of a way, and he's playing with her. And she calls him and she says, the Philistines are upon you. Philistines are upon you. And he snaps them free, and the Philistines run away. She says, Samson, Samson, what are you doing? I thought you loved me. Why don't you tell me the truth? And she says, well, you know, if you just tie me with new ropes, that'll do it. I'll be helpless, Delilah. And so she ties him up with new ropes. The Philistines come on him again. He snaps the rope, and the Philistines run for cover. He's lied to her again. A third time, he says, you know, I got this beautiful long hair. If you just weave it, dreadlocks, you know, just weave it together, it'll, you know, with your loom. And so she gets out her loom and she lovingly weaves his hair together. Same thing happens all over again. The Philistines are on him. He breaks free. He sends them away. And then she starts to nag. Samson. Samson, I thought you loved me. Samson, I thought you loved me. Tell me the truth now, Samson. Samson, do we love each other or not? Tell me the truth. You can tell me your secrets. And this time the Philistines come with the money and they say, 60,000 bucks is yours, young lady, if you hand this man over to us. And so she finally gets him to tell the truth. And he said, well, I am a Nazarite. See this? I never had a haircut. And we're reading this story and we're thinking, Nazarite, Smazarite. Yeah, you never cut your hair, but man, you hung with the women and you're doing it again. You touched dead bodies, animal carcasses, bowstrings drawn from animal carcasses. You're barely a Nazarite, Samson. But he says, Delilah, you know, if you'll just cut my hair, because after all, it's the haircut that's giving me the strength, you see. Then I'll be as harmless as anybody else. And so she goes to sleep and she's gathered, she's got the money ready for her hands now. And they cut his hair. And sure enough, Samson is as weak as any other man. He doesn't know it, but the Lord finally says enough is enough. And the strength that God had given him now leaves him. And they seize him and they gouge out his eyes. And then they take him down. You know, he had destroyed their harvest 20 years before this and they had never forgotten it. And they put him in a mill in the prison. And he goes around and around and around and he grinds the flour for their bread that year. It's sad when people that we love keep going back into sin and back into foolishness, and it breaks our hearts. I think I've told you, I know I've told you about a cousin of mine named Jay. Jay was from a family of means, had everything that a person could want as a very young man. And Jay had come from an extended Christian family. He came to church with us. He went to Christian things. But Jay wandered and got into drugs. And it got worse and worse and worse and worse until it was cocaine. And Jay, it destroyed his life. He was destroying his life. There were all kinds of things that happened because of that. And you just ripped us apart. I remember my grandmother was still living, just often all she could do was talk about Jay, her grandson Jay, because of all of the trouble that he was getting into. And you know what I'm talking about. You got Jays in your life, people that you're praying for, people that may be a blood relation, people that just might be someone that you just care about, and it just rips you all up because you see them destroying their lives. And what is it that keeps us praying? It's grace, the grace that is greater than all of our sin, that comes to us, that gives us hope, that that same grace, which is what we don't deserve, would come to those whom we love. So Samson now is grinding this wheat. And the Philistines have a festival, a great festival to their god Dagon. Dagon's their top god, small g. They're whooping it up. He's the god of harvest. And Samson has ground up the wheat for the harvest festival, it seems, this year. And they say, let's bring him down here. And they bring Samson in, and they're making fun of him, and they're kicking him around, and he's falling all over the floor, and they're enjoying the bread, perhaps. And Samson says, can you just help me to the guy who's keeping him? Can you just show me where something I can lean against? There would have been a couple of wooden pillars that would have held up the balcony where there were 3,000, this is a big place, 3,000 Philistines and all of their leadership up there just hooping and hollering and have a grand old time making fun of Samson. And Samson says for the first time in his life, Lord, would you help me? Tim Keller says this is the first time in Samson's life that he had faith and humility. And it's by the grace of God. He says, Lord, remember me. Lord, would you strengthen me just one more time? Let me get revenge for my two eyes. And he says, let me die with the Philistines. And Samson brings down the house. And in one blow, the author says he kills 3,000 Philistines. He kills more Philistines in that one day than he had in his entire life, and he had done it. He had done his share of killing Philistines. And here begins the end of the Philistines, whose end would be with King David, that little boy with the slingshot. And the family buries him over in Manoah's grave. It's kind of bittersweet for them. He has ruled the nation for 20 years, began with such hope, and God was so gracious to him. 20 years he ruled the nation. He defeated, had a major defeat for the Philistines. He came to faith in the end. But it was a time of sorrow, because it was also the end of his life. My cousin Jay finally got the end of himself. He went to multiple 12-step programs, some of them expensive, Betty Ford type things. He ended up in a little place, a basement of a little church in Florida. I was visiting my grandmother, and I went up to visit him. They let me in because I was a pastor, and I went down in the basement of that church, and I think I've told you before, there's a group of young guys, rough-looking guys, but singing at the top of their lungs because they had been forgiven much, their leader told me. And Jay said, Lee, he said, I want what Grandpa had. Grandpa had come to the Lord in his 20s, and Grandpa had a deep faith. He said, that's what I want. He was rejecting all of his past, rejecting the means that he had available to him, because that was all gone, and saying, I want what Grandpa has. I want that faith. And it was a time of celebrating for me, for my grandmother, for our family, those of us who knew the Lord, saying, finally, Jay has put his faith or renewed his faith in the Lord. But as he never got through 12 steps. He got through 11 out of 12 steps. And then he fell for a woman. And didn't finish the 12th step. They found him in a bathtub one night. Complications of alcohol. And so we were torn, so sad that he had such a young ending. And he's so glad that the Lord had saved him or called him back to himself and that he knew the Lord for sure. We knew then that, yes, Jay did know the Lord. Yes, he was with Grandpa. And all of this was past. He was forgiven by the grace of God, and how grateful we were for that. You have friends and family like that, people that you're praying for, some of them maybe for a lifetime, that you're praying and praying and praying that they will get something that they don't deserve, like you and I got something that we didn't deserve, that they would receive the grace of God, that they would put their faith in Jesus. In a minute, I want to have a time of prayer for those of that we in our family and friends that need Jesus. But before we do that, I want to go back to 2 Peter. It says in 2 Peter 3:9 that the Lord is not slow in keeping his promises, some understand slowness. It seems like he's so slow, doesn't it, sometimes? But he's not slow like we would understand it. Why? He's patient. The old version puts it, he's long-suffering. He's long-suffering. He's not willing that any would perish, but that everyone would come to repentance. It's a promise of grace. That's what gives us hope. It's not what we might do to manipulate the circumstances. It's not what kind of worship service we might have or might not have. It's not whether we give them the story or not. Now, God might use those things. God might use our words. God might use the words of somebody that we haven't even met that happens to cross paths with them today or tomorrow or sometime between now and when they pass on. It's grace. The hope of grace, that they would receive something that they don't deserve, just like we have. That's what God gave to Samson. After all those years of praying for him, his poor daddy in the grave. But in the end, the Lord gave him faith as he was buried alongside his dad. And if God gave grace to Samson, we can nod our heads and say, yeah, he gave grace to me. He gave grace to you. He gave grace to thousands and thousands and millions of millions who love and follow him. And God will give grace to those whom we love and care for. I'd like to invite us now to pray for those who are breaking our hearts, many of them. And there's some of them that are, you know, they're not doing crazy things. They've just been wandering for a long time. And so I want to invite you now, maybe with a friend nearby, to pray silently. And then I'm going to invite any who would like to name some names where you're comfortable. This won't be recorded for posterity. It'll be something that will just be done between us. But if there's someone you'd like to name, and maybe give a brief description of, then we will pray for them together. But take a moment and pray now with a neighbor if you're comfortable. If you're not, just pray silently. And then we will all pray together. If you want to come to the altar and pray, you are welcome to do that as well. You're very welcome to do that.